This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello, welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Douglas Impuga, and here's what's coming up.
Our two countries share similar aspirations and values. We're both committed to democratic governance with its respect for human rights, the rule of law, and the principles of democratic accountability.
That's Ghana's President Nana Akufo-Addo speaking shortly after his meeting with U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris in Accra. We'll have more on the U.S. Vice President's visit coming up. Also, protesters are met with police resistance in Nairobi, and I take a look at China's investment on the continent. All this and more coming up on Africa News Tonight. U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris is in Accra today at the start of her three-nation trip to Africa. Ghana's President Nana Akufo-Addo Monday delivered the joint address with Harris after their meeting. During the press briefing, both leaders addressed questions about how the two nations will strengthen their relations. Akufo-Addo told reporters that when he met Harris in 2021, they pledged to explore areas of interest for the mutual benefit of their nations. The West African leader added that the visit by Harris reinforces the commitments made in 2021 and vowed to engage Washington further.
This visit reinforces our commitment to engage each other further. Our two countries share similar aspirations and values. We're both committed to democratic governance with its respect for human rights, the rule of law, and the principles of democratic accountability. We're member states of the United Nations with a mutual attachment to its values and principles. We have collaborated effectively on several matters over the years, and a major outcome of this afternoon's meeting was the reaffirmation of our commitment to collaborate further and provide mutual support at both multilateral and bilateral levels.
Harris echoed Addo's sentiments and said Washington is determined to strengthen its relationship with the continent. She expressed excitement about Africa's economic growth and its youth.
The median age on the continent of Africa is 19. Think about what that means in terms of potential. Think about the fact that by 2050, one in four people occupying a place on Mother Earth will be on this continent, and what that means. The trip that I have taken to come here, being here, is about recognizing the incredible opportunity with a sense of optimism about what we do now and how it will impact the world going forward.
That was Ghana's President Nana Akufo-Addo and U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris at their news briefing at Jubilee House in Ghana's capital, Accra. A short while ago, I spoke with reporter Kent Mensah in Accra about the public reaction to Vice President Kamala Harris's visit.
Well, I must say that it was quite an exciting moment in Ghana. It's been a moment that people were really waiting for. So as soon as the plane touched down Sunday afternoon, you could see from the faces of the Ghanaian officials, the smiles, school children who have been waiting, holding miniature flags. Everybody was super excited to know that Kamala Harris has finally arrived in Ghana. There was drumming and dancing, you know, the Ghanaian traditional way of welcoming guests of such nature to the country. So I must say that it was well organized and everything went as smoothly as possible.
The Vice President and President Addo have met before in Washington twice before. And we understand they met this morning in Accra. What do we know of what went on during the meeting?
Yes, so after another colorful display at the forecourt of the Jubilee House, which is the seat of Ghana's government, the Vice President was treated to a military parade. Then she walked the red carpet into the seat of government. She met with Ghana's President Akufo-Addo behind closed doors, and then they held bilateral talks. So after, they held a joint press conference, and that is where U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris announced a couple of decisions that they've taken behind closed doors, including support to Ghana and then also other West African countries, especially those in the coastal areas. an amount of $100 million was announced to fight terrorism, also to ensure stabilization on the continent. U.S. also admitted or acknowledged that, yes, Ghana is going through a couple of crises economically, so U.S. is willing to support Ghana when it comes to convincing other bilateral creditors to also think about either canceling or reducing debt that Ghana is going through to support our economy as well. She also mentioned a few things talking about human rights. A question was asked to her about LGBT, and she said for her, she stands for human rights. So she thinks that anything that will guard human rights for each and everyone, she is in for it.
Vice President Kamala Harris is scheduled to visit Cape Coast Castle on Tuesday. What's the significance of the castle?
So the Cape Coast Castle has been a symbol of slavery in not just Ghana, but West Africa. It's been one of the biggest across the coast of West Africa. So basically, that 400 years ago, that was where most of the slaves were kept. It is a place that symbolizes the slave trade era. Often when we welcome guests from the diaspora, especially people of Black origin, we take them to Cape Coast for them to relive the moment that our ancestors or forebears went through. And it is also a healing process for them to also know how Africans felt during the slave trade era. So you recall that when President Obama was in Ghana, he visited the Elmina Castle as well with Ghanaian officials. So we thought that this is an opportunity for her to go through that moment to also acknowledge how Ghanaians or Africans went through, and then also probably know the history of slavery in West Africa, not just Ghana.
Before the Vice President concludes her visit on Wednesday, she was supposed to meet with Ghanaian businesswomen. Do we know what type of businesswomen is she meeting?
Yes, so I think right from the Vice President's speech when she touched down, she's made it clear that she wants to have a first-hand experience with the ordinary person. I strongly believe that just as she is going to meet with young people at the recording studio tomorrow after a major speech at the Black Star Square tomorrow, we've been made to know that she is also going to meet with women. Some of them have the background as farmers. Others are mid-level women who are mid-career women. So it's a mix of women with different backgrounds, just so she's able to have a first-hand experience of what women go through and then how they feel about Ghana-U.S. relationship.
That was Kent Mensah reporting from Accra. Kent also spoke with Ghanaians to get their thoughts about Vice President Harris's visit. Festus Opong says he welcomed it.
Kamala Harris's trip to Africa, I think, is a very welcome one. And the fact that she's coming to Ghana first and specifically is one that I'm very happy about for several reasons. The first of which is that currently the country is in dire economic straits. And for sure, there will no doubt be funds that will be made available to the government of the day to help it in the implementation of its policy. And considering that we just got done implementing the domestic debt exchange program, I think such an amount will go a long way to helping the country, even if not settle external debts, at least help with sorting ourselves out internally. I think that's the first part. And the second part for me is the fact that currently Ghana is bordered by countries where safety is an issue, countries where violent extremism is the norm now, countries where there have been coups and violent takeovers. So that sets off alarm bells. And as a country, having the Vice President of the United States of America come here, I have no doubt that there will be talks on issues of security, which I think is a prime thing that they should do, because without security, there can be little that can be achieved. So Kamala Harris's arrival in Ghana is a very welcome one, as I already stated, and is one that I'm very happy about.
Winfred Latte says the visit comes at a good time for the region.
I think Kamala Harris's visit to Africa and Ghana is very important. Being such a significant figure and being the highest profile member of President Joe Biden's administration, you see, the U.S. intends to deepen relationships with Africa amid global competition over the continent's future has come at the right time. Harris is arriving at a time of, you know, severe challenges for not just Ghana, but other West African nations as well. I also believe her visit will promote economic growth and food security in a country that faces a debt crisis and soaring inflation that are driving up the cost of food and other necessities. Now, my expectation, I'm really hoping that this relationship renewal counters China's influence, which has become entrenched in recent years through infrastructure initiatives like lending money and expanding telecommunications network. The U.S. should really pay more attention to Africa, talking about more scholarships. It's exciting to hear the investments made to fight terrorism in some African countries. It's really a step in the right direction, having Kamala Harris here in Ghana.
After her visit to Accra, Harris goes to Tanzania and then Zambia. She's the highest profile official from the Biden administration to visit Africa. She follows several U.S. officials, including Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen. Last month, U.S. First Lady Jill Biden visited Namibia and Kenya. You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Douglas Impuga in Washington. For more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. China's loans and investments in Africa and its role in the development and socio-economic transformation of the continent was the topic of discussion at a recent virtual press briefing organized by Georgetown University in Washington. China has become a source of economic support, especially for infrastructure across Africa. However, there are concerns that much of it is financed by loans, saddling impoverished nations with debt. Here is a look at the event and the speaker's thoughts on this topic. The event at Georgetown University in Washington was organized by Georgetown's Initiative for U.S.-China Dialogue on Global Issues and Howard University African Center. While some policy analysts hailed China's foreign aid and investments on the continent, others expressed concern about the intentions of Chinese influence in Africa. Yaik Fu, a policy analyst at Development Reimagined, a consultancy firm specializing in China-Africa relations in Nairobi, says China is committed to investing in Africa and even willing to restructure debt.
For example, Chinese investment, both from private and public, has led to the construction of new roads, like ports and railways, expressways, highway and buildings in Africa countries. And these are very important to improve the connectivities and regional engagement and also promote trade. Another one is about the industrialization. There are more than 10,000 Chinese-owned companies like operating in Africa. And this account for around 12% of Africa's industrial production. Also have a very important and positive impact to the local, and this including but not limited to increased value-added production and also job creation and on trade.
Winslow Robertson, founder at Cowries and Rice, a China-Africa strategic consultancy firm, said some Chinese infrastructure projects in Africa are misclassified, making it difficult to get the right data.
What ends up happening is that a lot of people end up misusing this word investment, because what they usually mean by investment, because FDI, foreign direct investment, has both a technical and a practical definition that both revolve around an entity from one country working with an entity with another country to make money over the long term. Problem is, almost everything that makes the news in terms of the China-Africa economic relationship is not that. That road built is not FDI. The port that's built is not FDI. That a lot of these construction projects do not count towards FDI. Now, why does that matter? All money's the same, right? Well, not exactly. And so if you're a policymaker, if you're an academic, if you are interested in business, if you use the wrong word, you're probably going to pull the wrong data, and then your analysis might be problematic.
Winsaleardo Moses, a data analyst at Boston University's Global Development Policy Center, noted that while China's infrastructure development loans have supported various sectors. The negative impact is that Chinese finance projects have had a harsher impact on the environment.
When we look at the impact of this financing, much of the research has shown that generally Chinese finance leads to short-term economic growth in many of these countries. However, on the negative impact of the finance, Chinese finance projects have had a harsher impact on the environment, especially for those large-scale infrastructure projects. So you do see benefits and risks to these finance. However, it doesn't negate the fact that it has contributed to kind of this building up of infrastructure, and just through basic economics, we know that infrastructure can help catalyze economic growth.
Chinese funds back a wide range of projects from transportation infrastructure to energy and minerals, medicine, agriculture, and telecommunications. But critics accuse Beijing of engaging in debt trap diplomacy. Africa, a continent of more than 1.4 billion people, is becoming the new international geopolitical landscape as global powers compete for its attention. As competition from China and Russia increases, the U.S. has doubled efforts to revitalize relations with African nations. The recent U.S.-Africa summit in Washington has been followed by visits to Africa by high-profile American officials. In Nairobi today, thousands of anti-government protesters marched on the streets of the capital, Nairobi, despite the government's declaration that the protests are illegal. Police used a water cannon and tear gas to disperse marchers. Opposition leader Raila Odinga has called his supporters to join the protests. He addressed the crowd today at various stops along the protest route. Odinga and his party, Uzimio la Umoja, One Kenya Coalition, are leading the protests against the rising cost of living. They also say President William Ruto should resign, saying he wasn't validly elected in last year's election, although Kenya's Supreme Court has rejected that claim. For more on the protest, VOA's Kate Pound-Dawson spoke with journalist Mohamed Yusuf in Nairobi.
The capital city today, there were full of police officers roaming many streets because protesters were planning to come into the central business district and many were blocked. And we've seen running battles in several neighborhoods in the capital, Nairobi, and also other parts of the country, in particularly in western regions, there were protests. So there were police officers in the streets, and we've seen protesters engaging police in running battles. We've seen also protesters throwing stones. And so far, there hasn't been much a problem other than running battles and, of course, people closing their businesses, and also from the opposition themselves, the likes of the main opposition leader here, Raila Odinga, he has been going from one leader who started his campaign demanding Kenyans to come out and condemn the High Court of Living, and of course, him complaining about the electoral, just concluded the election.
What has the government said about these demands, about the demands for President Ruto to resign, and about the issue of the high cost of living?
First of all, to start off with all these protests, the government has declared these protests illegal. The opposition challenged the electoral results in August at the Supreme Court, and there were no sufficient evidence. And we know from a legal perspective, Ruto was declared president, and the Supreme Court said that there was no illegality. The issue when it comes to the high cost of living that the Kenyans have been complaining about is that the government is saying we're still young, we're still working on it. And we understand that the government has been saying that we're looking for maize, for example, maize flour across many countries, and we're trying to bring in that. That hasn't been the case. And of course, the government has also reduced the prices of fertilizer to make sure that Kenyans are able to farm and produce food. That has been some of the things that the government is working on. But it seems like it's six, seven months now since the president was elected, and Kenyans feel that things are not working and the prices keep going high and high.
That was reporter Mohamed Yusuf speaking with my colleague Kate Pound-Dawson from Nairobi. Mohamed also said the opposition has called for protests to continue every Monday and Thursday into the future, but is growing concerned they could force many businesses in the city to shut down. A spokesperson for the government of Rwanda shared details of the release of Paul Rusesabagina, the man portrayed in the film Hotel Rwanda. Rusesabagina, a Belgian citizen and a U.S. legal resident, was found guilty in 2021 on terrorism charges and sentenced to 25 years. He denied the allegations. He was granted clemency and freed on Friday. She spoke with VOA's James Bate. Here is part of their conversation.
First of all, if you know the recent history of Rwanda, and as President Kagame has said, Rwandans have forgiven the unforgivable. Even people who committed genocide here have found themselves freed and back in the community. So with this case, it's important to note that there is consensus that serious crimes were committed by Rusesabagina and his FLN militia, for which they were convicted. And under Rwandan law, commutation of sentence does not extinguish the underlying conviction or the obligation for compensation to the victims as decided by the court. Paul Rusesabagina made a request for clemency as provided for by our laws. He accepted more responsibility on the crimes he was convicted of, and he has also made important pledges for his future conduct, including his exit from politics.
Yolande, did your government release Mr. Rusesabagina just to avoid international isolation or pressure?
There's certainly been a lot of international interest in this case, mainly because of a successful Hollywood film from, 15 or more years ago. The U.S. was particularly interested, given that Rusesabagina is both a Rwandan citizen and an American resident. However, Rwanda has always maintained the serious concerns we have with this case, especially around political violence by armed groups, including those that are led by people operating from the safety of developed countries. This is something that the United States has agreed with us on, as laid out last night, in last night's statement by the State Department, as well as the decision by the U.S. to retroactively rescind the wrongful detention assessment. So suddenly there were a few false starts, but Rwanda and the U.S. were able to have constructive discussions carried out on the basis of mutual respect and an understanding of the real issues, particularly Rwanda's concerns about the safety and security of our population.
That was Yolande Makolo, a spokesperson for Rwanda's government. She spoke by phone with my colleague James Bate. A Rusesabagina family member told VOA the family was not in the position to speak right now about his release. It's not clear when Rusesabagina will arrive in the United States. Seventeen people in Northeast Democratic Republic of Congo were executed by the militia group CODECO. The French news agency AFP says the group was traveling Saturday in two vehicles between Bunia, the provincial capital of Ituri province, and the mining town of Mabualo. All were taken to Pechi village, a CODECO stronghold, where they were executed on Sunday. The incident comes after CODECO, or the Cooperative for the Development of Congo, massacred 30 people in several villages on March 18th. The militia claims protect the Lendu people against their rivals, the Hema. Fighting between the two communities killed thousands between 1999 and 2003 until the intervention of a European force under French command. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Douglas Impuga in Washington. For the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbil Yeboro, and our engineer tonight, Alfredo Santos, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.